Welcome to The Business of Medicine with Sharon Hollander. This is the show that reveals the behind-the-scenes secrets of healthcare. With the changing rules, regulations, and challenges facing healthcare, you can't afford to miss this information. Now, here's Sharon Hollander.
Good morning and welcome to The Business of Medicine. Today I'm very excited to introduce my guest. He has over 25 years experience working for major insurance companies and in healthcare organizations, particularly in the area of negotiating contracts. He's also an author of a new book called Take Control of Your Healthcare Costs, which is a guide to reducing your medical expenses. And today we're going to talk to him about some of his experiences and tips and advice on how to reduce medical expenses. Good morning. I'm sorry, I didn't say your name. It was Barry Lionel Posner, and he's the author and our guest this morning. Good morning, Barry.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
So tell me a little bit about how you came to decide to write this book.
Well, over the years, many people have come to me and asked questions. They come with mounds of medical bills, not knowing how to get through it, giving me their experiences. And I thought, you know, it would be helpful to put the information in writing for them. And over the years, I've been able to find ways to save money for health plans, hospitals, medical groups. And so I decided to write this book as a hobby, started out as a hobby and took on a life of its own. And so here we are today, 2 years later, in the age of Obamacare. And so this book is for those consumers who have a myriad of problems, don't have problems. They have families and they're trying to find insurance. They have insurance. So it's really for everybody. And so that's how it came about.
I know with myself sitting down and writing, sort of when you stare at that blank, that first page when it's like Word document opens and it's completely blank and you go, all right, then I'll just sit here and write a book. Not so easy, right?
Not so easy. Not so easy. It took on a life of fun. But it was fun and challenging, and the end result, I think, will help a lot of people.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about...
Go ahead. I was going to say, when you have a large family, none at all, whether you're self-employed or unemployed, chronically ill, or you're doctor avoidant, you can find the best healthcare options at the best price. And so that's what this book's about.
Okay, so tell us like some specifics on, like I know right now, personally, everybody's sort of like up in arms about the new ACA regulations and what this impacts. And, you know, even myself being in the healthcare field, I recently met with my insurance broker and there's so much confusion because I was under the impression that first that small group policies were going to be exempt from, you know, going into the exchange. Then I find out, no, everybody has to go into the exchange. Then I talk to other people and they say, no, that's not true. You could still keep a PPO. And so it's quite confusing. Like there's no one source of knowledge to dispense with this information.
So this law is vast and it crosses many, many areas of healthcare. It impacts just about everybody. I know at some point it was thought that those who have insurance keep their insurance, and some really can't. And so, you know, where Obamacare fits in is, you know, if you have insurance, great. If you don't, then it's going to give you insurance. But it provides protection against being denied insurance for pre-existing conditions, obviously. It gives coverage for chronically ill children, so that's, you know, that's a new thing. It limits co-payments, deductibles, and out-of-pocket maxes, and it limits premium increases without state approval. So that's huge because, as you know, California, a lot of health plans have been increasing their premiums without regulatory guidance or compliance.
Right.
It provides mandatory coverage. Some of the best types of coverage that it provides is emergency services, hospitalization, and maternity and newborn care. And, of course, prescription coverage for seniors. So if you don't have insurance or have the ability to buy insurance, it now becomes affordable. And also, if you have insurance, basically it limits the ability to for pre-existing conditions, so they can't deny you anymore for pre-existing conditions, which I think is great.
So you think it's going to actually happen, that it's going to all go through and everything's going to be smooth and hunky-dory and everybody's going to be happy?
Well, working in the industry, mostly for health insurance plans, I've seen a lot of change, a lot of products come about. And to be quite honest, you know, Medicare, when it started, there was problems, and it took a while for it to ramp up. Same with Medicaid. And here we are today, those people who voted against Medicare are now reaping the benefits of Medicare in their retirement. So, yeah, I think it will, you know, get working out the bumps and the issues, I think definitely will take hold and be a major part of our healthcare plan. Absolutely.
So there was a time when HMOs first came out and we thought those weren't going to last.
Right. I mean,
remember the good old days?
Right. If you remember Clinton, the Clinton healthcare reform, nothing got passed, but look at all the changes. Not one piece of legislation other than Tennessee, TennCare. Most of the proposals never got put into place, but it put in motion this change that now everybody buys into. HMOs, PPOs, all these different types of managed care health plans have come about, and they're here to stay. So nothing really got passed, and all the work happened, and it really just changed the mindset of the American public. And so I think this will happen as well. You'll always have two systems, those who can pay more for it, and those who need the basics. But in the overall scheme of things, if everybody has coverage or everybody has some type of access to health care, then the overall cost as a community, in each state will go down because we won't have to subsidize those without insurance. We won't have to subsidize. We won't have to have increased premiums. We won't have to pay more out of pocket just to cover those people. So I think that's a good thing. And it'll take a while for people to realize that, to see the benefits of it, but I think we're on the right track.
There's been so much talk about that it's not, you know, obviously the, you know, in California, we have the Covered California, right? Or California?
Right.
Yeah, Covered California. But right. In other states, I mean, when they try to go to the federal website, it's just been, we've just heard so many horror stories in the news and with people talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, even in California, we had problems with our website, and quite honestly, you know, we're going to have those kind of issues when you can't work them out all 100% and then flip the switch to turn it on.
Right.
I think it's best to get most of the plans in place, most of the structure in place, turn it on, and work out the bugs. So a lot of this is just media hype.
Right.
You know,
well, you know,
yeah.
I work as a president of a medical billing company, and so my physicians, like, I see things from the physician's perspective, which, so, you know, you take that with a grain of salt, but a lot of the people are coming to physicians' offices now with, you know, a Blue Cross or a Blue Shield or some type of major insurance carrier's identification card, and on it has the California Care logo. And so they were actually turning patients away because they say, well, we're not participating with California Care. When in fact it was just an advertising or marketing addition to their identification card.
Interesting, yeah. That's been happening a lot. And I think there's a lot of confusion in the provider community, the healthcare provider community, and that will be worked out. And I think eventually everybody's going to see that it's a good thing, and they should participate.
Well, the thing is, they haven't released like the reimbursement. That's the biggest issue. Is, you know, the doctors call me and they say, should I participate with this plan or that plan? And they do not have reimbursement that they can review. Rumors are that they're going to be reimbursed at state Medicaid rates, which most providers don't want to accept. You know, especially if they've had a relationship with a specific patient that has a PPO, and now all of a sudden that same patient, their reimbursement's cut, you know, another 50% or more.
Absolutely. It's, you know, well below the cost of doing, of providing the care for these members. But, you know, and it's a guaranteed revenue stream for some providers, depending on how it works. Medical groups that are HMO related will get, you know, if you have an HMO Cover California plan, then these providers are guaranteed, you know, a number of members, a number of patients up front for quite a while. Same with hospitals. But most health plans who participate in Cover California are going to switch all of their individual plans to this Cover California. So either the providers will lose the members, or they'll get an additional set of members. So I've seen hospitals gaining revenue streams. They're getting less per member, less per service, but overall they're getting much more volume. And
right.
So, you know, it's how you manage your members, how you manage the books of business with these
right.
members.
And in your experience, I mean, some of our previous discussions that we've had on the show have been about whether or not there are actual providers in the network, because it was my understanding that it was sort of an arbitrary, random inclusion or exclusion for providers to be part of Covered California. Has that been your experience?
From what I understand is, depending on the reimbursement that they currently get, they were either included in the plan in Covered California to ensure that there's access and availability. The state requires that if a health plan is going to be in a market for Covered California, they have to have access and availability. They have to have a number of physicians, a number of hospitals, ancillary providers. And in order to fulfill that, in some areas, they automatically included these physicians. And if that's the case, most of them don't get a reduction in what they are contracted to with the health plan. So they may think that they're going to get a reduction in pay, but in actuality, if they were signed up without having to sign a contract reducing their reimbursement, then they should be expecting contractually what they had signed up for in the beginning. And so that is part of the issue. The other part is physicians who are part of organizations, the organization would sign them up automatically at a reduced rate, and they didn't know about it. So that's been another issue.
Right.
Hospitals have a choice for signing up for the individual plan at a discount, and and some health plans actually have just included hospitals for what is called the SHOP, the small business Covered California, and they're automatically in. I know a couple of the Blues plans across the state have just automatically included hospitals for those books of business. But there's no rhyme or reason from the outside, but from the inside, it's driven by affordability for the particular area and particular members.
And for the consumer. It looks like we have to take a short break, but we'll be back with live from Encino on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the Business of Medicine on TalkZone. Here's Sharon Hollander.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome back to the show. We are live this morning, so if you have any questions or you'd like to join our conversation, please do so at calling us at area code 463-6748. Once again, the phone number is 888-463-6748. This morning we're in discussion with a 25-year veteran of healthcare organizations and negotiating contracts, also the author of Take Control of Your Healthcare Costs, A Guide to Reducing Your Medical Expenses. And we're talking to Barry Lionel Posner this morning. So if you have any questions for me or for Mr. Posner, please don't hesitate to call us and join the conversation. Barry, before the break, we were talking a little bit about negotiating contracts. And one of my questions, you know, I represent primarily solo practitioners in practice by themselves. And they often approach me and ask me if they can, that they're not happy with this rate or that rate. And they tell me, call the insurance company and try to renegotiate. And they're sort of, you know, I think to myself, yeah, right, we'll see how that'll work. Because most of the time, a solo practitioner really has no leverage to contact an insurance company and say, okay, I'm not happy with the reimbursement. It's sort of like, these are our rates, take them or leave them, either be in the PPO or not be in the PPO. Would you, is that an accurate depiction of what really goes on, or am I misinformed?
No, that, it depends on the health plan. It depends on the market, and it depends on the physician's specialty. If we're speaking strictly about a solo practitioner, if you're, and I'll take it in those three steps, a health plan, say, for example, Blue Cross. Well, Blue Cross has networks all over California. We'll stick with California for the moment. So Blue Cross of California has thousands of primary care physicians in Los Angeles that they contract with, and their rate is their rate. If you, that same one physician who contracts with Blue Cross gets one rate with Blue Cross, but if they're contracting with HealthNet, they might gotta get a little bit higher rate, for example, because Blue Cross is the largest health plan. So it depends on how large the health plan is and what their needs are. A specialist, pediatric cardiologists can demand a little bit more money because they don't have as many of those in a certain area. So if you're up in a rural area and you're the only primary care physician, you can probably command a little bit more. So it's leverage and it's market. And, and really that's what it comes down to, is the need of the health plan. And you have to weigh, again, as I mentioned before, you have to weigh the number of members you have, the number of consumers, patients you have versus which health plan you're contracting with. Some physicians don't contract with Blue Cross because they do get paid the lowest or they do pay the lowest. So they'll just stick with some of the smaller health plans. Some will not contract HMO. They'll only contract PPO because they get a higher rate for PPO.
Right.
So it depends on the product. HMO, your managed care product, versus, you know, if you have an indemnity plan, which is a fee for service where they provide a service and they get paid for that service, HMO where they get a capitation and they get their money up front.
Right.
It depends. But, yeah, by and large, the larger plans have a take or leave it attitude of negotiating. And they do give, depending on the area. So
right.
You're right.
And then, so, but like in the past, you know, it was too difficult for providers to go direct insurance companies to do all the contracting. So they developed this sort of intermediary called the Independent Physicians Association or Practice Association. So do you think IPAs will still be viable in this new ACA milieu, or do you think that those are going to actually go by the wayside as well?
Well, I think IPAs are here to stay for HMO business. For PPO business, they don't have the ability, unless they're a medical group. The difference between a medical group and an IPA, the IPA physicians sign a contract and they are members of the IPA, whereas in a medical group, most of the physicians are employed. So they have the ability, the medical group has the ability to negotiate on behalf of those physicians. But in California, IPAs legally cannot negotiate on behalf of the physician until they sign an agreement to do so. So on a PPO basis, you won't find many leverage opportunities in an IPA, but on an HMO basis, you will. So for Cover California, for the PPO business, these IPAs are scrambling to figure out how to collectively negotiate bargain.
Some of them go out of business.
Absolutely.
Not mentioning names.
And they're getting gobbled up by other health plans, by other medical groups. The larger medical groups, Healthcare Partners, is buying the smaller medical groups or the IPAs, and that's where you get your leverage.
Right. Now, we had a situation once with a provider who asked us to carve something out of his contract. And we're like, you know, it was actually with Blue Cross. We called them. They sort of laughed at us and hung up the phone. It was a very unproductive phone call.
Yeah, that's commonplace with smaller physicians and smaller IPAs. You know, when you have a large group like Healthcare Partners, they command leverage.
Right.
And usually it's different types of books of business that they leverage against each other. You have Medicare, you have HMO, you have PPO,
seniors, yeah.
Medicaid. So yes, it's a tricky business out there, and there's a lot of moving parts, and you really have to know the business in order to be able to be profitable.
Right. And certainly, like, you know, I think one of the things that we talked about also in the past is that there seems to be more of a shift now for providers going back into private practice and getting out of the larger groups and getting away from the IPAs and the large medical groups and being, you know, self-employed and or, you know, small groups where they share expenses and not necessarily share tax ID or reimbursement amounts, but that they just share expenses, but they're independent and solo or small group practices.
You lose a lot of autonomy when you go into a bigger IPA, and basically what you're signing up for is the rates that they could garner or the contracts that they can, you know, successfully negotiate. And so you're giving up autonomy in that regard and for the hopes of gaining more members, more patients. And sometimes that just doesn't work out, and so you have to go your separate ways and start over, or backtrack, or reorganize yourself into a better to make yourself more marketable to the health plan. Absolutely.
And then, I mean, you think it'll get better though, the customer service part aspect of the health plan, because it's some are better than others.
Well, it's going to come down to service and quality. If health plans are going to succeed in this environment, I think my experience is the finances, the reimbursement amounts are all going to level off. And what's really going to set a health plan apart is their service and their quality to their providers. And that's bearing out right now in the 8 health plans that have signed up for Cover California. Some of them are withering away in Cover California, whereas the 3 major health plans each have 30% of the market. And those 3 are going to have to distinguish themselves from one another based on service. And right now that's not bearing out. But that's not happening right now. But it will have to happen in order for people to see who they can stay with. And that's an individual basis. So you as a consumer, if you sign up for Cover California with Blue Cross, for example, and you get horrible service, you have no place to go to. And so that's really what's going to happen is they'll have to distinguish themselves through service and their quality of care.
Well, it's interesting because when I first started this business, I used to talk to doctors and they tell me, oh, I can't go out of the house. I can't go to a dinner party or a restaurant without somebody like lifting their shirt and saying, here, look at this bump or feel this or touch this, do this, right? And now You know, I used to roll my eyes and think, oh, yeah, poor you. Well, you went into it. What do you want from me, right? And now it's like I can't go into a social situation where someone says, oh, you know about insurance? Like last week even, I had three providers call me, not about their billing issues, but family members or their own EOBs that they didn't know, understand, or some type of billing issue that was unrelated to their reimbursement, saying, how do I handle this? Why did I get this bill? What does out-of-network mean? You know, and it's like, oh, my God, really?
That's exactly why I wrote my book.
I know. That's why I wrote my book, too. Leave me alone and read my book, right? I wanted to talk more about your book. So first I want to talk to you, writer to writer. Were you at all surprised at the writing process in terms of, like, I know with myself, you sort of sit down and you lose yourself in it?
Absolutely. I found myself spending so much time on the ideas, and when I would get an idea, I would just start writing it, and my family would come and say, well, you've been writing for 4 hours, you've been doing this, spend some time with us. So, yeah, you get lost in it, and it's a lot of fun. Especially if you have a passion for what you're writing about.
Right.
So yeah, it was great. And my editor was just phenomenal at structure and how to put things into more of a layperson's term.
Right. Did you work with an outline? Because that's like the number one, to outline or not to outline, that's the question.
Oh, I definitely did an outline, and it changed many times.
Yeah.
It changed as I would come up with more ideas, the outline would expand, and then would realize, oh, I'd have to cut some things out because it just doesn't apply anymore. So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It looks like we have to take another short break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you more about your book and the content and some ways that our consumers and listeners can actually reduce their own medical expenses and how you can help us to do that. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Business of Medicine on TalkZone.com. Here's Sharon Hollander.
Good morning. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Business of Medicine on TalkZone, and we're live today so we could take your questions, or if you'd like to join the conversation, you can reach us at area code 888-463-6748. I'm talking today to Barry Lionel Posner, who is a healthcare executive and an author of Take Control of Your Healthcare Costs, which is a guide to reducing your medical expenses. And just before the break, Barry, we were talking about the writing process. And now I want to get into a little bit more about the content of your book and how it can help us as consumers and or healthcare executives like myself, or providers even.
Very well. Very well. Well, for starters, you can find my book on my website at myhealthcaresavings.org, and you can also find it on Amazon, Take Control of Your Healthcare Costs. And the book is it's a guide for making savvy healthcare decisions. You can use this book to sort through the various options, choosing wisely and saving money. So Chapter 1 gives a broad picture of the myriad of healthcare options, and it includes Medicare, Medicaid, and, of course, Obamacare, and the many private insurance choices. Chapter 2 helps you decide which of those choices works best for you and your family, and the following chapters help you find ways to save money on prescription drugs, surgeries, preventive care, and even doctor visits. And then finally, you'll learn how to read medical bills, find mistakes, and negotiate for lower payments. So, again, whether you have a large family or none at all, whether you're self-employed or unemployed, chronically ill or doctor avoidant, you can find the best healthcare options at the best price. So, for example, and I'll skip to Chapter 4 of my book, and it talks about if you have insurance, how to maximize your insurance. And the first way to do that is to read the manual, read your evidence of coverage. Know what you're covered for and know what you're not covered for. It also talks about ensuring that you get proper authorization before you have services. I have a friend of mine who went and got an MRI the other day, and he told me he had his MRI and everything was fine. And I said, oh, did you get prior authorization for that? And he goes, what's that? And I told him what it was. You have to call your health plan, let them know that you need an MRI, and make sure that your physician who ordered the MRI gets authorization as well. Or make
but
sure that
shouldn't the MRI center know that?
They should
shouldn't
know
the imaging
that.
Center?
They don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
So then what's going to happen to him there? It's going to be denied. Like, he's going to get stuck with that MRI bill because it's going to be denied as not previously authorized?
Exactly. And, but, you know, a lot of the times the health plans upon appeal will reverse that and give a retroactive authorization, knowing that an MRI of $1,500 isn't going to fly for one of their members. There's a lot involved in that. You know, the member can go to the media. There's a lot of issues involved in requiring a member to pay for that. And depending on the health plan product that you have, an HMO member clearly needs to get pre-approval for referrals from their primary care physician. PCO member may be on the hook a little more for that.
Right. But we had a situation this is sort of an aside, but we had a situation where one of our providers, patients were showing up with copies of referrals, but the doctor was not on that health plan. So their office was accepting those patients because they kept calling us and saying, but they're coming in with a referral. And I said, yeah, but it's only a piece of paper. If you're not, like, it's not a guarantee of payment. And if you have a referral for a doctor that's not on the plan, like, what would happen is the primary care doctor would decide that he was going to refer his patients to, you know, Dr. Smith. But he wasn't a part of that health plan.
That happens a lot. Out-of-network providers is a huge issue. And if there's a takeaway from this conversation for your listeners, it's that know who's in your plan. Know which physicians, which providers, which hospitals are in your plan. You can go to a hospital, you can get admitted, have surgery, and you're going to have 6 or 7 bills from different providers for that one surgery, and half of those providers might not be contracted with your plan. It would be good to know that up front so that you could either negotiate with those out-of-network providers or ask to be transferred, you know, to another facility or get your services at another place where they all are contracted. And that's a huge problem. And I think everybody at some point who has insurance experiences an out-of-network provider and what that means to them. And the bottom line is it means a lot more money.
Right. But I think, like, from what I was talking to one of the agents the other day, they said that one of the things, and I don't know if it's, you know, my terminology is sort of like swimming around in my brain, whether it's Covered California or the new ACA PPO coverage, but there's going to be basically no out-of-network benefits at all to anybody. So it's like you either stay in the network or you pay out of pocket are going to be the two options.
Yeah, that's one of the basis of Covered California and the Obamacare is you have to have a network to cover those folks, and you have to stay within that network. And you know, it's not so different from a Medicaid network. It's not so different from a Medicare network. It's pretty much the same concept. You know, if you go out of network, well, with those plans, with those products, you get reimbursed a little bit. Most of the time, the health plan will send the member the payment, and the member has to send that payment to the physician or to the hospital. And so, yes, that's the whole basis. That's how it becomes affordable, is you need to stay within those networks, and that's their concept.
Mm-hmm. So, but just for edification, like an insurance company basically has different product lines, like they insure you for your home, your life, your health, your right? And the health plan specifically is a component of an insurance company that just specializes in health, medical.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Dental, vision. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's what's considered your health plan, right?
I mean, it's a gamble. I mean, you're gambling that they're gambling, the health plan is gambling that you're not going to get sick, and you're gambling that you will get sick. It's a lose-lose. But it's a necessary evil for us to survive as people, as communities. We have to have protection. We know we're going to get sick. We know that something's going to happen. You can't go on your merry way. Maybe if you're 24, you can, but eventually we all need health care. It's just a fact of life. And if we drive, we all need car insurance, automobile insurance. It's a fact of life. Now, to require that of people, to require them to have insurance, that often goes into the political realm of your rights as a citizen. Why should I be required to have insurance? Well, if not, then eventually, somewhere down the line, somebody's got to pay for those who don't have insurance. You don't want insurance and you get in a car accident and you go to the hospital. Who's going to pay for that? It's not right for people to think that doctors and hospitals should be paying for everything. They have to survive and they have to be able to sustain themselves. My personal feeling is for profitability in healthcare is a tricky thing. It becomes an ethical issue and an ethical dilemma when you get on a broad scale. Down to the individual level, physicians, hospitals, we're in a capitalistic society, free market, you should be able to do what you want in America and make money however you want. But, there's those out there who say, profit and healthcare shouldn't occur.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I basically have the same discussion day after day with my providers because they're like, well, how am I going to make any money? And volume? Well, I don't want volume, And so not only have to shift in their financial planning, but they kind of have to shift their paradigm thinking in terms of, what they actually do to society and what they agree to provide in terms of care to their patients,
Listen, physicians go to school, medical school. They spend 4 years at the least and tons of money. They deserve to make their money back. They deserve to make a lot. They deserve to have the chance to become rich, if you want to put it bluntly. Hospitals need to be able to sustain themselves in a community. Otherwise, we're not going to have a place to go to. But, at what cost, to the consumer? At what cost to the health plans? At what cost to the insurance company? So everybody has to participate. Everybody has to have skin in the game. And that's what accountable care organizations are doing now. Everyone's trying to look like Kaiser. Everyone's trying to have a connection, a relationship. Hospitals are connecting with health plans and connecting with IPAs and medical groups to provide care to a book of to a certain population. And if they can do it in a cost-effective manner, then they reap the benefits and they reap the additional revenue that comes in. And so I think everybody's going to have skin in the game, and it has to go from the consumer all the way up to the insurance company and the providers in between. If everybody has skin in the game and has aligned incentives, then it will work. Right now, physicians or hospitals have on a fee-for-service basis, per unit cost, they have an incentive to keep the member in the hospital as long as possible. And we all know that that's not the best case. That's not best for the member for many reasons. It's a waste of their time, their money. A lot of infection and illnesses occur in the hospital because people are sick and they're around each other. And it doesn't make sense. For the consumer, it makes sense for the hospital. Physicians have to round on these members more frequently, and it takes time, and they don't get paid as much for that. So the incentives aren't aligned, and they're not aligned with the health plan, they're not aligned with the hospital, and they're not aligned with the physician. And the member's caught in the middle. The consumer's caught in the middle. And when they could have been discharged 2 days before, they're staying there, and they have to pay more out of their pocket for that. If there's case rates for reimbursement up front, prospective reimbursement, then that aligns the incentives where a hospital says, oh, we've already got our money for this heart surgery. Let's get the member into a rehab facility when it's medically appropriate so that that way they can make room for another patient. That doesn't occur right now. Not on a large scale. On a smaller scale, it does. And where hospitals and physician groups are savvy, they set up their incentives that way. And so I think that's where it's going to, that's where it has to go. Everybody has to have skin in the game. Otherwise, it'll keep going double-digit inflation in healthcare.
It looks like we have to take another short break, but we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to The Business of Medicine on TalkZone.com. Back to Sharon Hollander.
Good morning. We're in discussion today with Barry Lionel Posner, who is author of Take Control of Your Healthcare Costs, A Guide to Reducing Your Medical Expenses. We're live, so if you want to join the conversation or if you have a question for us, please call us at area code 888-463-6748. Before the break, Barry, we're talking a little bit about healthcare organizations in general, and I want to get into some actual specifics on what consumers can do to actually save money right out of their personal pockets.
So a lot of consumers are reactionary when they get sick, when they get hurt, and they immediately go to the ER, or they immediately go to the hospital, or they immediately go somewhere that they think they're going to get the best care. And I think a little bit of research or a little bit of knowledge before that happens can help them save considerably. For example, 65% of ER visits really aren't ER visits. They could be seen in an urgent care center. You have a headache, you have stomach pain, and people run right to the emergency room. Your out-of-pocket cost for an emergency room visit, if you have insurance, is about $50 to $150. Urgent care centers, $20 to $40. Most urgent care centers have in-house pharmacies where they can fill your prescription right away. So I would recommend, you know, looking into urgent cares, knowing where they are in your area. And if you do get sick, consider that, you know, maybe you could be seen in an urgent care center. And if it's too serious to be seen in an urgent care center and you go there, they'll send you to the ER, and they usually have a relationship with the ER, the local ER. Surgeries, outpatient surgeries. A lot of people, myself included, have gone to a hospital for an outpatient surgery, and when I got the bill, my co-insurance was, or co-payment was 20% of the hospital bill. A surgery center can be just as effective, sometimes even better quality care, often with the same physician who are on staff at the hospital, own the surgery center, and your cost is a third. Prescription drugs. We all know that brand name prescription drugs are primo. I mean, we would rather go and get the best, most advanced, what we see on TV, but generic drugs are often just as effective. In most cases, most of the most common drugs that we take, most of them have generics. And you can, in where there is no generic, most of the pharmaceutical companies offer discount programs, rebates, if you will. So just looking at those, checking those out can help you save considerably. Excuse me. And then when you get your medical bills, it's said, and I'm not sure I truly believe this, but 80% of the medical bills contain some mistakes, some errors, usually coding errors, extra services that weren't provided. So you wait till you get your EOB, your explanation of benefits, from your physician, or I mean from your health plan, and compare the two. Look at the services that you got, and look at what the health plan has paid for or covered as medically necessary. So you get your bill and you know that's correct, or you finally get it correct, you might be able to negotiate that bill with your provider. Most hospitals and most providers will give some type of discount, prompt pay discount. I often call on the phone and say, I have this bill. I'd like to settle it. Can't afford all of it, but if I pay you right now with my credit card, would you take 20 or 30% off? And I'd say about 80 to 90% of the time they do. Large organizations, right. UCLA, Cedars, they don't do that. But most of
them. Go ahead, what were you saying?
UCLA, Cedars, those kinds of larger organizations, it's much more difficult to negotiate with them than smaller organizations. Most physicians will give you a discount. And then the last thing, excuse me, that I wanted to talk about is pre-planning. The IRS can be your friend with health care, with your medical expenses. Obamacare provides premium tax credits for those who need it to purchase insurance. If you have a job and you have insurance, most likely your employer will offer a flexible spending account where you can set aside pre-tax dollars to pay for your health care expenses later on. And that usually will save you the tax on the money, your income tax that you would have paid, so 25 to 30%. So you put away $1,000, you got an extra $300 that you wouldn't have had because you would have been taxed on that $1,000. You can pay for your medical expenses. And so those are just quick ways that your listeners, consumers can save on healthcare costs. And the last thing I wanted to reiterate again is if you have insurance, the main thing you want to do is know who's in your insurance plan. Out-of-network providers, whether it be a hospital or a physician, will always cost you much more. So, thank you, Sharon.
You're welcome. Listen, I have a quick question. So, but like some of the things that I see from the physician's perspective is that patients present themselves with identification cards that are not up to date. A lot of times they either there's misinformation being disseminated. Either the health plan or the health plan's website is indicating that there is a physician who is in network when they're not in network or vice versa. And so we still have issues when patients come in with, you know, like the health, my understanding is the health plans can't keep up with updating new identification cards at the speed in which patients change their insurance or their benefits or their group policies change. Do you have any experience with that?
I do, and my answer to that is take notes. As a consumer, as a listener on this radio show, you call your health plan, you check the website, and the physician is in network. Take notes. Make sure that you detailed information, keep all that information. It helps you later in appealing if the health plan turns around and says, no, this provider was not in network, so therefore you're on the hook for it. I can't tell you how important it is to take detailed notes because you can call the same insurance plan three times and they'll give you three different answers on whether a provider is in network or out of network. And quite frankly, they cannot keep up with it. It changes quite often, daily, and so we encourage people to check and take detailed information, notes, and same thing with providers. Members show up, their patients show up, call the health plan. It's worth the extra step. I know it takes a lot, and for each member you have to spend a few minutes on the phone, maybe 20 minutes sometimes, but in the end, if you can prove that you've done your due diligence, the health plan has no choice but to take your case on appeal and oftentimes they reverse their decision. So I that's the one thing I can say is take names and take notes.
Before you said you were talking about errors on bills, it's one of the reasons that my business has been so successful is that because there's so many errors out there, we provide a service to physicians to submit claims on their behalf. We have upfront edits. We have coding knowledge. We have 25 years of experience. And so we reduce the errors for our providers, you know, on the front end. That being said, you know, obviously nobody's 100% infallible, but when I did research for my book, I found that the majority of errors are primarily on the hospital side you know, because of the manner in which hospital bills are actually generated from different departments. And too many people are basically touching the data before it actually turns into a hospital bill.
Absolutely. And it's the key is getting the right diagnosis code.
Right.
And oftentimes, health plans will see a diagnosis code and say, that doesn't match with the bills, what the bill amount or what the procedure code should be. And so the health plan will change it. And a lot of the times, if you don't watch it as a hospital, in their contract with the health plan, it says that the health plan can do that. So unless the hospital negotiator is savvy enough to negotiate that language out, then they're left with that kind of a, you know, they're basically at the whim of the health plan changing the reimbursement.
Right.
And even in a physician's office, I have a personal experience of getting preventive wellness visit, and the ICD procedure code was changed, and I'm being billed for the entire visit, and I've been fighting with my insurance company and with the provider, the physician provider. It's a larger physician group who has a billing service internally, and they can't get the coding right. I keep getting billed for this service, and it's been going on for 3 months.
I know. It's very frustrating.
It is.
Anyway, for all your listeners out there, I want to just repeat that you can get a copy of Barry Posner's book at www.myhealthcaresavings.org, or it's available also on Amazon.com. Thank you for being our guest today. It was very enjoyable speaking to you, and I actually learned quite a bit. So I appreciate you taking the time to meet with us.
My pleasure.
And anybody else? Yeah, thank you. Anybody that wants to reach us, you can reach me on my website at www.sharonhollander.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at Hollander Sharon, or on Facebook at author Sharon Hollander. Thank you very much for listening, and we look forward to coming to you again soon.